Here's a look at our top stories this hour. Iran says it has arrested dozens of terrorists as well as several nationals of European countries during the recent riots in the country. Russian President Vladimir Putin signs decrees paving the way for the four Ukrainian regions to join Russia. Russia vetoes a U.S. proposed resolution of the United Nations Security Council that aimed to condemn the move by four Ukrainian regions to join Russia. Thank you for joining us. Iran's intelligence ministry says nine foreign nationals have been arrested for their role in recent riots in the country. The ministry says the detainees are from Germany, Poland, Italy, France, and the Netherlands, Sweden, and other countries. It said they were either present in the riots or plotting behind the scenes. The ministry said the U.S. and U.K. were directly involved in stirring up the unrest. It added that scores of MKO terrorists, as well as mercenaries belonging to Zionist groups, were also detained. The ministry noted that 36 kilograms of explosives were also seized from Takfiri terrorist groups planning to exploit the unrest and detonate them in public areas. The riots in Iran broke out after the death of a woman in hospital days after she collapsed at a police station. Iran's police have dismissed allegations of physical violence against 22-year-old Mahsa Amini. Political commentator Firas An-Najm says the U.S. and its allies are exploiting the death of Mahsa Amini to advance their anti-Iran agenda.
This whole issue right now, what's happening with Mahsa Amini and this problem that's happening inside Iran, you know, we know that the U.S. and their allies are exploiting this to the highest level and trying to infiltrate and trying to cause destabilization inside Iran. They are trying to weaken Iran because they have tried many ways for many years to damage the system, to try to take the system down, and they failed miserably. And all the Iranian people should stand against this and condemn this, and should understand that the unity of Iran and the strength of Iran is that there's no such terror attacks. But now that the U.S. has got involved and their little puppets, such as the MKO, that also have a very, very long history of crimes and treacherous acts and working with Saddam, and also committing terrorist attacks inside Iran.
A teacher in Italy risks a disciplinary sanction for cutting off an Iranian student's hair. The man did this after the minor refused to show solidarity for the protests taking place in Iran. Our correspondent Max Chivoli reports.
The High School of Human Sciences Leonardo da Vinci is located in central Rome, not far from the Colosseum. The school has a good reputation. It offers a mix of classical and modern studies and a cultural background which, reads its website, allows pupils to access any university faculty. However, earlier this week, one of Leonardo da Vinci's teachers cut a lock of hair from an Iranian student after urging her to express solidarity with the protests taking place in Iran. The underage girl had remained unresponsive to the teacher's request.
We were shocked at the teacher's behavior. He targeted an Iranian minor because of her nationality and made the student feel that expressing solidarity was an act due for her. An act of exclusion from the class was then turned into an act of violence when the teacher humiliated the student by cutting a lock of her hair.
The teacher was addressing his pupils on the issue of protests in Iran that had been going on for days after the tragic death of 22-year-old girl Mahsa Amini. She politely refused to be interviewed, saying that Italy's education authority has forbidden all school staff from engaging with the media on the issue. The teacher involved in the case risks now a disciplinary sanction. Even the mayor of Rome, Roberto Gualtieri, has said the episode concerning the Iranian student, if confirmed, would be an unacceptable form of bullying.
For sure there was violence in the way the teacher behaved. The whole story revolves around someone who has been bullied and their attacker. In between were the other students stunned, petrified, because of the teacher's gesture. They suddenly acted as if they were attendants. They were passive, resigned, a common attitude in our society.
The fact that a teacher, who is someone who should encourage free thinking and the natural reflection of wanting to do something for oneself, I don't know, I think it was absolutely unnecessary, and they should definitely face some consequences.
Also, the National Association of Principals of Rome has condemned the teacher's gesture, saying that teachers should always act with great caution and that principals must ensure that schools are a place of growth and not a place where one looks for media exposure. Max Civili, Rome.
A terror attack that targeted a police station in the southeastern Iranian city of Zahedan on Friday has killed at least 19 people and injured 20 others. Zahedan's provincial governor says security forces are among the casualties. The deaths include two senior provincial commanders of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The IRGC has blamed the so-called Jaish al-Adl terror group for the armed assault. It saw a large number of terrorists try to break into a police station shortly after Friday prayers, but officers warded off the attackers. Gunmen also attacked two other police stations and some other public places. Zahedan is the provincial capital of Sistan and Balochistan province, which has seen a number of attacks by terrorist groups, mostly based in neighboring Pakistan, over the past years. Iran's military has warned that it will retaliate if U.S. claims of downing an Iranian drone in the Iraqi Kurdistan region are confirmed. The chief of staff of Iranian armed forces says it reserves the right to counter and avenge the hostile move and will deliver the response in due time. Major General Mohammad Bogheri added that the U.S. claims show that it is in cahoots with terrorists and separatists. Bogheri said Iran is currently engaged in a harsh military campaign against separatists and terrorists in northern Iraq and is not conducting any operation against Americans at this point. He stressed, however, that Iran has full intelligence command over U.S. military bases in the Iraqi Kurdistan region. At least 20 people are killed, many more wounded, in a suicide attack on an education center in the Afghan capital, Kabul. Press TV's Rahmatullah Boghman reports.
Another black day for the residents of the west of Kabul. Today morning, a bomb hit the Kaj Educational Center in Dasht-e Barchi area in Sheikh Hazara neighborhoods. The students were sitting a practice university exam when the explosion went off. The victims of the incident were taken to the hospital. Their relatives report a high number of casualties.
My sister and my cousin were brought here to the emergency hospital. They are now in critical health conditions. They were at the educational center for their exams. As I witnessed, the victims were all innocent people. I saw nearly 60 to 70 people dead and wounded in one individual hospital.
Terrified, Muhammad Issa has brought his wounded niece to this hospital. He calls on the Taliban and the global community to do something to help get rid of such attacks.
I saw a lot of people killed or injured. It was very shocking. I visited the educational center. Scores of bodies were laid on the floor. People are terrified. I don't know why there is no end to our suffering. They attack us everywhere. Till when? I call on the global community to do something for the situation of Afghan people, especially Hazaras.
Here, Taliban security officials are visiting the site of the explosion. They say they will take all necessary steps for tightening security for all.
Islamic Emirate is watchful for the security of the people, especially in western Kabul. I promise that everything will come under our control and such incidents won't happen in the future. Such attacks on innocent students are carried out by the enemies of Islam and the people of Afghanistan.
Mosques and educational centers in Sheikh Hazara neighborhoods in Kabul have been the target of terrorist attacks for years. The Daesh terrorist group have claimed responsibility for most of such attacks. People here in western Kabul say the seemingly endless violence has exhausted them. They want peace, security, and justice. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Russian President Vladimir Putin has signed a decree for the formal accession of four Ukrainian regions of Kherson, Zaporizhia, Donetsk, and Luhansk. In a speech at the Kremlin, Putin said people in the four regions have become Russian citizens forever. More in this report.
For many years, the people of Donbas have been waiting for this historic day, which was preceded by a bloody war in the east of Ukraine that led to the intervention of the Russian army to save the Lugansk and Donetsk people from genocide. Despite Western pressure, the Russian president did not hesitate to accept the request of four regions of eastern Ukraine to join the federation through a referendum described as successful by authorities in those regions. Central Election Committee representatives reported that those who took part in the votes decided overwhelmingly in favor of the accession to Russia.
The unbroken people of Donbas, Zaporizhia and Kherson said the word. I want the authorities in Kyiv and the real masters in the West to hear me, and I want everyone to remember this. People living in DPR, LPR, Kherson and Zaporizhia have become our citizens forever.
In a ceremony attended by the heads of Donetsk, Lugansk, Kherson and Zaporizhia regions, Vladimir Putin signed a decree for the formal accession of the former Ukrainian territories controlled by the Russian army over the past months. As a result, the four regions became part of the Russian Federation, which is now obliged to protect them from any aggression under the constitution and the Russian military doctrine.
Today we are fighting for a just and free path. First of all, for ourselves, for Russia, for diktat, despotism to remain forever in the past. I am convinced that countries and peoples understand that a policy based on exclusivity of anyone, on the suppression of other cultures and peoples, is inherently criminal, that we must turn this shameful page. The collapse of Western hegemony that has begun is irreversible. And I repeat again, it will not be the same as before.
Our country is taking back its historical lands that our grandfathers defended. I am inspired that I caught and I am a participant of this moment. These territories and our people were artificially divided.
The West, led by the United States, has been supplying all kinds of weapons to Ukraine, sending large numbers of mercenaries to the country, and imposing huge economic sanctions against Russia. But it has failed to stop Moscow's special military operation in Ukraine. And for the Donbas, Zaporizhia and Kherson regions, which have been fighting for their right to become part of Russia, the accession means, first of all, security and sustainable economic development for them.
The right and decision of the four regions to join Russia is undoubtedly a historical moment. Moscow says strikes by Ukraine on those territories joining Russia today will be seen as an act of aggression against the state. It has vowed to protect the territories at all cost after their accession to Russia. Marina Kartunova, Moscow.
More on that. Russia has vetoed a Western-backed resolution of the United Nations Security Council that condemned its annexation of four Ukrainian territories. The resolution, co-sponsored by the United States, aimed to isolate Russia in its war in Ukraine. It would have called on Moscow to immediately withdraw its forces from the Ukrainian territories. China, Brazil, India, and Gabon abstained from the vote during the Security Council session. The U.S. ambassador said the U.N. was built on the idea of not allowing a country to take another's territory by force. The Russian ambassador to the UN pushed back by condemning the U.S.-initiated resolution as a hostile action. Ambassador Vasily Nebenzia said there will be no turning back for annexation of the Ukrainian territories, arguing that locals made, quote, an informed and free choice to join Russia. South Korea and Japan say North Korea has fired two ballistic missiles in its fourth test launch this week. The South Korean chief of staff says the missiles were fired towards the country's east coast. The launches came after South Korea, the U.S. and Japan staged a trilateral anti-submarine drills for the first time in 5 years. Days earlier, the navies of the U.S. and South Korea also conducted large-scale drills off the Korean peninsula. North Korea sees such military exercises as rehearsals for an invasion. The Friday's missile tests also followed a visit by the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris to South Korea this week. Pyongyang has increased such tests this year. Frank Smith, our correspondent in Seoul, is with us now. Frank, good morning. Tell us more about Pyongyang's fourth launch this week.
Well, what I think is significant about this is that the missiles traveled in excess of Mach 6. So that is a hypersonic missile and of a design that's more difficult to intercept. Several years ago, North Korea had displayed the ability to strike the U.S. mainland with an ICBM, an intercontinental ballistic missile. now with tests of hypersonic missiles, cruise missiles, submarine-launched ballistic missiles, North Korea is developing the capability of using and delivering nuclear weapons within the region, so-called tactical nuclear weapons. So without some incentives toward negotiations, we're likely to see North Korea again develop a broad-based nuclear weapons program and capabilities.
Frank, there, an anti-submarine, a trilateral anti-submarine exercise is also ongoing in the region. Can you tell us more about that, please?
Well, what's sort of sensitive here in South Korea about that is that it involves the so-called trilateral alliance that's involving the United States, South Korea, and Japan. Some people here in South Korea really bristle at joining Japan in this alliance because of the historical issues surrounding Japan's colonial occupation of South Korea for early in the 20th century. So that is a sensitive issue here, and it's meant to sort of counter, in terms of strategically, militarily, counter North Korea's development of submarines and submarine-launched ballistic missiles capable of carrying nuclear warheads.
Frank, thank you so much for joining us. That was Frank Smith, our correspondent in Seoul. Now to Burkina Faso, where an army captain has ousted the country's junta leader in a second coup in 8 months. The dismissal of Paul Henri Damiba was announced in a statement read out by a group of officers on the national television. They said he has been removed due to his inability to counter an insurgency in the West African country. The coup leader also dissolved the government and suspended its transitional charter as well as the constitution. Meanwhile, all Burkina Faso's borders have been closed and a nighttime curfew has been imposed across the country. Ousted junta leader Damiba had also come to power in a coup last January in a bid to address the insurgency crisis in the country. Well, that's a wrap for this edition of World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades, have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits in the next 2 years. We now present you an article written by Fiona Harvey. The piece is titled, Record Profits for Grain Firms Amid Food Crisis Prompt Calls for Windfall Tax. Companies at the center of the global grain trade have enjoyed a record bonanza amid soaring food prices around the world, raising concerns of profiteering and speculation in global food markets that could put staples beyond the reach of the poorest and prompting calls for a windfall tax. The world's top four grain traders, which have dominated the global grain market for decades, have seen record or near-record profits or sales. They are forecasting demand to outstrip supply at least until 2024, which is likely to lead to even higher sales and higher profits over the next 2 years. According to the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, food prices have surged more than 20% this year. According to the World Food Programme, WFP, about 345 million people are experiencing acute food insecurity, compared with 135 million people before the COVID-19 pandemic. Olivier de Schutter, a co-chair of the IPES Food, the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, IPES Food, and United Nations Special Rapporteur on Extreme Poverty and Human Rights, said, "The fact that global commodity giants are making record profits at a time when hunger is rising is clearly unjust and is a terrible indictment of our food systems. What's even worse, these companies could have done more to prevent the hunger crisis in the first place." Four companies, the Archer Daniels Midlands Company, Bunge, Cargill and Louis Dreyfus, known collectively as ABCD, control an estimated 70 to 90% of the global grain trade. Olivier de Schutter, the co-chair of the International Panel of Experts on Sustainable Food Systems, said, "Global grain markets are even more concentrated than energy markets and even less transparent, so there is a huge risk of profiteering." Olivier de Schutter said this year's food price surge happened despite what are thought to be abundant global grain reserves, but there was insufficient transparency from the companies to show how much grain they hold and no way to force them to release stocks in a timely fashion. Olivier de Schutter added, "We need to be looking at the grain giants and asking what they could have done to avert the crisis and what they could be doing right now." Cargill reported a 23% increase in revenues to a record $165 billion for the year ending 31st of May, while Archer Daniels Midland made the highest profit in its history during the second quarter of this year. Sales at Bunge surged by 17% year-on-year in the second quarter, though its profits were affected by previously incurred charges. Louis Dreyfus reported profits for 2021 up by more than 80% on the previous year, as revenues rose by nearly a quarter to $1.62 billion. John Rogers, an analyst at the credit rating service Moody's, said, "It was not surprising that supply constraints and rebounding demand had increased food prices and led to higher profits." John Rogers claimed, "I don't think they're colluding for outsized profits," adding that many more companies were also taking an increasing share of global grain markets. John Rogers claimed, "I don't think they're acting immorally. They're not intentionally driving up prices." He said the profits for grain companies had been increasing overall, but their margins had not markedly increased in percentage terms, adding, "This is a relatively efficient market. I don't think these guys can ramp up the prices." However, unpublished analysis by a non-governmental organization seen by The Guardian suggests that some food companies may be increasing their profit margins too. The analysis found Archer's Daniel Midland increased its profit margin to 4.46% in the first quarter of this year, up from 3.65% in the same quarter in 2021. And Cargill's profit margin increased from 2.5% last year to 3.2% this year. Sandra Martinson, a policy manager at Bond, a network of international development charities, said a windfall tax would be a way to restore some balance to food markets and help the poorest. Sandra Martinson said, the big agri-food companies are clearly capitalizing on the reduced supply and increased demand, further exacerbated by commodity trading. She added, when supply is significantly lower than demand, it gives space for price increases. But this is also exacerbated by speculative stock markets, since wheat and other commodities are traded in stock markets and therefore prices fluctuate. Oxfam has also called for a windfall tax on food companies' profits. Alex Maitland, a senior advisor at Oxfam, said, there are fears that speculation could be a driver in food price rises. Anything that causes hunger and starvation is immoral. Natalie Bennett, a UK Green Party peer, joined the call. She said, as a short-term measure, there are strong arguments for a windfall tax on the food oligopolies. The handful of companies with significant cross-ownership from hedge funds and from seeds to supermarkets are major contributors to the inflation that's driving the cost of living crisis to new heights. Vicky Hurd, the head of sustainable farming at the UK food coalition Sustain, stopped short of calling for a windfall tax, as she said it was hard to separate out the price effects in supermarkets where consumers buy most of their food. But she called for the British government to regulate to stop abuse. She said, while farmers, consumers and food workers are suffering in the face of spiralling food prices and fuel prices, those sitting in the middle of the food chain, a small number of huge dominant grain traders, are raking in vast profits. Sandra Martinson said, if government rejects a windfall tax, they should consider other means to curb prices, including price caps or tighter regulation on commodity trading, such as the ban on commodity trading introduced in India to limit inflation and price hikes. Sandra Martinson said food companies and commodity speculators were also blamed for fueling the food price rises seen more than a decade ago, when surging prices led to riots in many countries. The causes of the food price rises are complex. The war in Ukraine has played a big part, as Ukraine is one of the world's top producers of grain, sunflower oil, maize, and fertilizer. The war sent food prices soaring to their highest ever levels in March, though some have fallen back slightly since then. A standoff with Russia over moving grain shipments from Ukraine for export has been partially resolved, and some shipments have now moved. But harvests from Ukraine and Russia will be affected this year as well as next year. Rising energy and fertilizer prices, which have also spiraled due to Russia's special operation in Ukraine, have an impact, while the rebound in demand after COVID lockdowns has added further pressure. Grain harvests in Europe, in North America and India have also been affected by the climate crisis. Last year's heat waves in Canada hurt wheat crop yields in Canada, and high temperatures and wildfires this year are likely to inflict damage. This all adds up to a rosy picture for grain producers. Demand for their product is surging, supplies are constrained, and despite rising input prices in the form of energy and fertilizer, their profits look secure. The Guardian contacted all four of the ABCD companies for comment, but has not received any replies. Olivier de Schutter said, ultimately, we need to break up the monopolies that have a stranglehold on the food chain. A handful of companies control global seed and fertilizer markets, animal genetics, the global grain trade, and food retail. They're making huge profits at the cost of farmers, at the cost of consumers and the environment. In Britain, food prices have risen for many staples, adding to woes over energy prices that are set to top £3,500 a year this winter for the average British household. Poverty campaigners have warned People are facing harsh choices this winter over whether to eat or to heat their homes.
Food for thought.
Since we are passing through the days when Imam Hassan Askari, peace upon him, the 11th infallible heir of the Prophet of Islam, was in the state of agony on being poisoned by the Abbasid Caliph, here is an aphorism from him worth pondering upon. Worship is not abundant fasting and praying, but worship is abundant pondering. It is the continuous remembrance of Allah.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's lesson, we are talking about the principles of friendship, among the very good principles that we need to practice in a friendship so that we can make it successful. Now, friendship, as we all know, is something that everyone has it. It's something that's necessary for anyone to have in life. Whenever someone is brought up, whenever someone is born in this world, he's growing up with his family, with his father, with his brother and his sisters, and so many other people that he's living with, let's say the uncles and aunts, the likes of those people. So he's growing up with these people. But again, in life, the more he goes out, the more he opens out in his life. He becomes a student, he goes to school, he meets with people in a workplace. He definitely generates a relationship between them and the person they're meeting with in life. So friendship is actually a main necessary thing that someone will definitely meet in life. Now, what are the principles that are going to make this particular relationship, this friendship that we are making up, that has come up in our life, be successful? One of the sources of success in seeking brothers and making a friendship good, and as well as having a good relationship with your friends, is a good word. The Holy Prophet ﷺ has outlined a few words about this and has outlined the importance of good words in the process of creating a human relationship, a good friendship. And he said, and he is reported saying, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, good words are a charity. Speaking out good words is like a charity. It's like you're giving out something. It's like you're giving sadaqah, you're giving zakat. So this definitely shows that good words in this world or in any relationship is something good. And using good words in your friendship between the person you've just met or the person you met outside is something good and can improve your friendship, your relationship in a very good manner. And speaking bad words is definitely going to destroy it. So let's embrace it. It might look simple to us, but definitely it's something that shows that it can have a very big effect in any type of relationship that we are making up in life.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano. And in today's topic, we're talking about the principles of friendship. Now, one of the good principles of friendship that we've been talking about in this topic is the use of good words between us. Indeed, good words have their psychological effects on others. As when your friend hears a good word from you, whenever you're speaking good to your friend, you're speaking right amount of words in the right way, he or the friend that you're having will define it as your love for him. They will look at it like you like them. That's why you're speaking good to them, you know, or his good manner or his good action. You know, he'll look at it like it's a good manner you're having to him and his good actions, or that you praise his success and hard work or his intelligence. You know, you're showing him that I like your intelligence. I like your good habits, or his good actions also is help and helping others. So this good word will open a spiritual atmosphere between yourselves, between the two of you, you and your friend, and the feeling of his personality in you, as well as your respect for him, will increase, or it will turn the personality of the one praised into a personality that is sacrificing for others. It will build the feeling of them for you. They will have more trust in you they will love you, and definitely they are going to produce more from the other side. And together with that relationship, you're going to turn out to be good friends, good people in life. And it's definitely going to make you guys a good companionship. Thank you so much for listening to this show. Until next episode, inshallah, fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
An aircraft powered by electricity may still be some way off, but one of its types is already here thanks to a whole range of innovative solutions being developed by aviation firms. American company Aviation Aircraft has debuted its all-electric plane in Washington State. The aircraft, named Alice, took off the runway at Grand County International Airport and flew for 8 minutes. It reached an altitude of 3,500 feet before touching down the ground. According to the company, the aircraft produces no carbon emissions, significantly reduces noise, and costs a fraction to operate compared to usual light jets. The company says it continues to develop and tweak the plane's battery system for an hour flight.
We're targeting a design criteria of 35 minutes for a charge. And so that'll be a charge for the typical route length. It's actually, as I just said, it's actually a design point. So going back to the comment I made earlier about designing batteries for aircraft, it's one of the considerations is how quickly do we want it to charge? How much power do you want to be able to draw from it? So again, we're targeting call it 30 minutes of charge for an hour of flight time, or about 2C if you're...
The company aims to find its way into the market for trips that sit between 150 and 250 miles, a range that features aircraft similar in size to Alice. It will also be for both commuter and cargo flights. For aircraft manufacturers, this paradigm shift is driving fuel savings in flight and on the ground, reducing carbon footprints and NOx emissions while also improving reliability and cutting maintenance cost. Many people of the world are supported almost completely by animals because they live in areas unsuitable for animal husbandry. But these days, even some city dwellers are making their living out of animals, like a Virginia girl. Andrea Diaz quit her job at a restaurant and started to rent her pet alpacas to cheer up steer crazy Americans during the pandemic. Since the launch of her business in 2020, it has expanded from 2 to 14 alpacas. Interestingly, 5 with fluffy pets are regularly making a paid appearance at birthdays, weddings, restaurants, and offices. She charges a starting price of $95 per hour. Diaz says the best part is when there are kids' birthday parties, but even it's really a fun for the adults. She calls alpacas a good exposure because they attract people.
In most of its habitats, the heavily trafficked pangolin faces the biggest threat from humans. But in Taiwan, these gentle creatures are exposed to quite a different danger, feral dogs. In the island, a government policy has led to a surge in the population of feral dogs. The pangolins share most of their roaming area with the stray animals. Plus, these scaly animals cannot move as fast as their attackers. When faced with danger, pangolins curl themselves into a ball shape. but the tail still remains at the most outer side, and that's where the dogs hit them hard.
Ecuador's Galapagos National Park is testing different coral replanting methods in an effort to restore fragile underwater ecosystems around local islands.
These corals are important because they are recyclers in the ocean. They convert all the CO2 into oxygen. These corals are important because they are refuges, nurseries, and nursery areas for some fish species.
Coral reef die-offs affect the marine food supply chains and are considered a major climate tipping point. The experimental project is run by park rangers and volunteers in a bay on Santa Cruz Island. Since 2020, they have tested how corals reproduce when they are placed on surfaces like bricks, cement, or tied together and strung on metal frames. They're growing samples in a nursery before adding them to bay. The rangers are reporting improvements with the appearance of new fish near the replanted corals.
A free climber known as the French Spider-Man scales a 48-story skyscraper in Paris to fulfill a goal he set for himself once he reached the age of 60.
A few years back, I promised myself that the day I turn 60, I have to climb the total tower. Because 60 years old marks retirement age in France, and so I thought this would make a very good nod.
Alain Roberts says this building is not as hard as others he has climbed. The French Spider-Man has ascended over 100 of the world's tallest buildings, including the Sydney Tower, the Sears Tower in Chicago, and the Burj Khalifa in Dubai, amongst many others. Roberts says he spent 2 decades climbing mountains before attempting urban climbs. Using his rock climbing experience, he sometimes carries a small bag of climbing chalk to help him grasp the small protrusions of building walls. Many of his climbs can last several hours. The 60-year-old daredevil says he wants to give people the message that age is a number and one can still be active and do sports.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
A Palestinian farmer has discovered an ancient Byzantine-era mosaic when preparing to plant an olive tree on his plot of land in the Gaza Strip. The farmer and his son have been carefully excavating the area for 3 months since spring. The pair dug out 3 patches, revealing glimpses of an ornate mosaic with intricate images of birds, flora, and tile patterns. Its full size is roughly 23 square meters. The discovery has set off excitement amongst archaeologists. Experts say it is one of the most well-preserved specimens with precision in graphics and richness in colors. According to archaeologists, the mosaic pavement dates back to the 5th and 7th centuries. Last month, another Palestinian farmer found the rare stone sculpture while working on his land, which dates back to around 2500 BC. They're back as India has revealed or released several of them into the grasslands of Kuna National Park after a 70-year absence in the country. The 8 radio-coloured African cheetahs made the long journey from Namibia. The big cats were released during a ceremony by Prime Minister Narendra Modi that coincided with his birthday. After their acclimation in the national park, they will be released into a 5-hectare spread of land in central India covered by grassland and forest. The felines will share the landscape with other animals and roam with leopards, sloths and striped hyenas. Their reintroduction is the culmination of a 13-year effort to restore the species, which vanished from the country decades ago. Another 12 cheetahs are expected to join the fledging Indian population next month from South Africa. With more funding, the country hopes to gradually increase the population of cheetahs to around 40. World Cleanup Day unites millions of volunteers, governments and organizations to tackle the global waste problem and build a sustainable world. People in several countries joined the efforts again for a waste-free world. Volunteers were seen in mangrove forests in the suburb of Bangkok. They collected more than 1.5 tons of rubbish in just a few hours. Trash picking events were also held in the Philippines and Vietnam. In Hanoi, hundreds, mostly students, armed with metal tongs and sacks, walked along major roads. They said their aim is to raise awareness about protecting the environment. In Manila, people cleaned up the city's beaches that are major tourist attractions. The annual cleanup day has been running for over a decade, from divers collecting marine debris to children picking up trash on beaches have just one goal: make our planet a cleaner place.
Chinese astronauts are celebrating their first ever mid-autumn festival in outer space while sharing their otherworldly experience with people on Earth. The crew had a close-up view of the moon from China's Tiangong space station and their third month in space. On the occasion, the ground crew organized a series of celebrations, including a family reunion for the astronauts. The ground crew also prepared elaborate food packages that had been prepared before the launch of the spacecraft. Typically, the traditional festival is kicked off by the first viewing of the full moon on the 15th day of the eighth month of the lunar calendar. Despite being able to see the moon rise and set 16 times a day, the astronauts say the moon is special on this occasion. Forestry authorities in southwestern China have opened a new canteen for wild Asian elephants in a bid to stop them wandering into villages. The canteen in Yunnan province provides the animals with attractive and nutritious meals while exploring man-animal harmonious coexistence. During these years, the province has explored multiple ways to reduce the encounters between humans and elephants and try to keep the animals away from farmers' crops. There are now approximately 1,400 hectares of dining halls for elephants, with many expanding from 100 to 240, such as corn, rice and sugarcane. They are planted on a large scale and within easy reach of the elephants. The location of such canteens is extremely selective, usually away from villages and major roads, and the chefs are locals. Most of the time, you have to visit an exhibition to see art. But what if art comes to see you instead? Well, a group of artists in Mali have created a floating art venue that will travel up and down the River Niger. It's called the Pirogue du Zem, which is a floating vessel. It's designed to host plays, exhibitions, dance shows, and so much more. The idea is to make art a movable feast that is no longer restricted to fixed venues in cities and accessible to all people. The project was created by a local artist and architect who had a vision to bring art to the masses. The vessel is 20 meters long and 6 meters wide, built with storage and enough space for exhibition. Government officials say the floating venue will showcase Mali's talents and creativity while attracting tourists.
Colombia is known for its tourist attractions and is full of breathtaking natural sights such as beaches, mountains, deserts, and forests. The South American nation is also one of the few places that give tourists the chance to have an encounter with whales. Every year, from July to October, domestic and foreign tourists flock to Colombia's Pacific coast to catch a glimpse of humpback whales. The large animals reach the coast after traveling thousands of kilometers from Antarctica and southern Chile. But for visitors, there are strict rules to help preserve the area and the whales. Tourists are now being welcomed for whale watching after a two-year hiatus due to the coronavirus pandemic. This is also the time when humpback whales start their reproductive process.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
From declining monarch butterflies in North America to disappearing bumblebees in Europe, there is mounting evidence that insects are in rapid decline. Please stay with us for an article in this regard written by Dave Gunson, writer. This article is published under the heading Climate Crisis is Killing Off Key Insects and Spreading Insect-Borne Diseases. Here's more. Love them or loathe them, we need insects, yet their numbers are decreasing. From declining monarch butterflies in North America to disappearing bumblebees in Europe, there is mounting evidence that insects are in rapid decline. This should worry us all, for insects are overwhelmingly important. They are food for innumerable larger creatures such as birds and bats. They control pests, recycle nutrients, help to keep the soil healthy, and they pollinate 3/4 of the crops we grow. Without insects, life as we know it would grind to a halt. The causes of insect declines are numerous, with habitat loss and the industrialization of global farming leading the way, assisted by growing use of pesticides, the depredations of invasive species, increasing light pollution, and more. Populations of many insects are now much reduced compared to the past, and most now exist in habitat islands, fragments of their favored habitat surrounded by inhospitable terrain. Sadly, climate change is likely to be the final straw for some. Of course, the climate has changed in the past many times, and insects have survived. Indeed, insects have come through all five of the